Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You're tuned into SEC Sunday Night, part of the Chief Sports Network.
Hit the lights. It's Sunday night. Welcome to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chief Sports Network, proudly presented by Hewitt Domodiros Law, HDLawSC.com, right here on SEC Sunday Night and the Chief Sports Network, where we have the casual conversation for the serious sports fan. You are a part of our family. And if it's your first time watching us or listening to us, we want to welcome you as a part of the family. Hewitt Domodiros Law wants you to be a part of their family as well. You're not just a number and you're not just a case file. You exist as a real person with a real story that matters. And they've won tens of millions of dollars for their clients, and so that helps as well. They're going to get to know you, your life, your story. Brad and Dean are the absolute best. They will be the guys that you talk to. You will get Hewitt or Domodiros if you give them a call. So make sure that you do that. Tell them you heard about it right here on SEC Sunday Night on the Chief Sports Network. Craig, what's going on? It's NFL Championship Sunday, and we are here to have some fun. What's going on with you? First and foremost, we know that it's important as a family that we discuss, are we doing okay? Is everybody good? And of course, what you sipping on tonight?
Well, so we're doing good. We had a snow day Friday. We just got the phone call 10 minutes ago. We'll have a snow day tomorrow. So nice little four-day weekend. So everybody's good. It is cold and just cold and snowy here in Detroit. But I got another shout out. You know, last week we had a lot of fun with the Chicago dog. This week we have our water and we have a little Geno's East slice Chicago pizza. Have you ever had Chicago pizza?
No, I have not, Craig. You know, these Chicago themes you keep throwing my way are a little out of the region of this SEC homer. So I have not experienced the world of Chicago foods, but thank you for continuing to bring that to me and to our audience. We appreciate it for sure.
Yeah. So the Chicago deep dish is similar to a casserole, maybe. It's got sauce, but you've got Italian sausage in this one. You've got your cheese. You've got pepperoni. It is always a good idea. Geno's East was good because that was the frozen thing I picked up at Kroger. By the way, Geno's East or Kroger want to sponsor already. But if you're in Chicago, check out Lou Malinati's on State Street. That one, just outside the Loop, that is the best Chicago pizza that you can get, my friend. How are you doing, by the way? What do you got to drink? I see you not got your new fancy little fandangled SEC Sunday night thing. What is the ball at the bottom there? You've got a football, a basketball. Is that a volleyball? What do we got going on there?
That would be a baseball, my friend. It would be a baseball. You can't quite see the threads on there, but I heard through the grapevine you have a baseball story for us. That is not for the top of the show, but for the end of the show, my friend, and we will get around to it. But I am doing just fine. My Patriots, as you can see, are headed back to the Super Bowl, and I'm excited about that as we are here on Super Bowl Championship Sunday. We have a lot of things planned and a lot of fun with you guys tonight. It's gonna be a great time. We have a loaded show with the college football season coming to an end. We're gonna tip our cap to that and the national champions in Indiana. We have some college basketball to dive into across the SEC. And we need to look at the 2026 college football playoff format. We also have message boards with Casey coming up, freezing cold takes. And I have a transfer portal rant to get to at some point. But first, we do have Uncle Tony coming in just a few minutes. Tony Siracusa, the managing editor of Last Word on College Football, will be here to take us to the courtroom, break down this national impact between the Duke versus Darian Mensah case. Tony has been at the forefront of a lot of these court cases across the ACC, the ACC, as we call it here on SEC Sunday night. We big fans of the ACC. Big fans of the ACC. I say a little tongue in cheek there. We will see. We need to look into this case, Craig, not because we cover the ACC, but because I believe that this case has a significant impact on the world of college football and on your favorite college football team. And when I say your, I mean you, the listener, you, the viewer. If you are out there, this is an important case because this has the potential to trickle down into the world of college football at large and definitely into the greatest conference in the sport. Now, just want to say hello to some people over in the chat. We've got Eddie checking in from Conway. I'm sure things are a lot better and warmer over in Conway for you, Eddie. Maybe not the best, but I did see some things out in the Dillon direction. Dillon, South Carolina, we're getting a little frosty. And so maybe in Conway, I'm not sure what you got out there. We are we're good and slushy here in the Columbia area. Craig is covered up with
I think we had about 5-6 inches of snow on top of ice. We're at the point where like they put the salt down. Doesn't even touch it.
I got stuck behind one of these road treatment trucks for about a 30-mile stretch on the interstate just the other day. I want to say hello also to Jason over there from Lexington County. Jason, not that far from me. So shout out to the Columbia area listeners. But I got stuck behind this thing. My truck looks disgusting because I was behind this tanker that was spraying the salt solution all over the road. All right. Enough on that for now as we jump to the courtroom. I want to say welcome and hello, as we said a moment ago, to Uncle Tony, managing editor at Last Word on Last Word on College Football.
Hang on, I got a show. Siracusa
is here. Craig has deep dish pizza.
No pineapple on this.
No pineapple. Yeah, no pineapple.
Just Chicago deep dish, buddy. Just Chicago deep dish. Little Italian sausage, pepperoni.
Tony, California native and Rams fan, is joining us here as we have 15 seconds left in the first half. Seattle just went up 17-13, and Matthew Stafford will take a snap and get ready to make his way into the locker room for halftime. So we've timed it up well, Tony.
Yes, we
did. To kind of get you in. While there's not actual game action going on. So first of all, how are you? Are you surviving the winter apocalypse that is sweeping the nation and heavily affecting the Southeast, as we do not do well in these types of conditions?
Yeah, you know what? I think I have, kind of like storm fatigue. And I think it's because we've been hearing about it on the news for 6 days before the storm even got here. And preparations, and you know, granted, look, I'm grateful for the information on preparations because I'm not from this part of the world. You know, we don't have these storms in Southern California, but it's like, oh, you know, now we're on day two of it here. We're fine. We've got, you know, our whole front and the whole backyard covered in big sheets of ice. Not really snow, but you know, hardened ice. But you know, we've been fine. Haven't, you know, lost any electricity or anything like that yet. We've been told we've got a good friend who is an electrical engineer with Duke Energy, and she's out there, you know, with the crews working grids and whatnot. And she said, based on their forecast, if we can make it to 11 o'clock, because we're going to get another surge in a little bit, if we can make it to 11 o'clock our time, with the electricity, we'll probably be good going forward. So
yeah, I'm starting to see the power outages hitting the upstate of South Carolina.
Yeah,
definitely haven't made it to the Midlands yet, and I'm thankful for that. And we are also thankful for you because you always bring us the top tier information, especially as it pertains to things happening in a courtroom.
Sure.
So Tony, when we look at this Duke versus Mensa case, put this into layman's terms for us. You had a great piece.
I could understand it.
You had a great on last word.
The ultimate layman.
Exactly. We
not lame, not lame man, but just layman.
No doubt about it. If you could break it down so that every viewer and listener can understand not only what's going on, but then I want to lead into a little bit of how this spills over. But just give us the facts.
Sure. Well, look, to start with, if it helps anyone understand how we got to where we are, there's the first brief. We have the entire docket printed out, everything, and we've read through all of it. And when I say we, I mean me and the cats. We've gone through all of it. Look, here's the net is that Darian Mensa had agreed to a 2-year deal with Duke. As we all know, players are signing contracts now, right? The revenue sharing, NIL. Here's what a lot of folks probably don't know is when they think of the NIL and they're looking at it as, well, there's your name, image, and likeness, and you have a sponsor for a car dealership or local pizza place or whatever, and they pay you and you do commercials, whatever. And yeah, that's the way it's supposed to work. What has happened is players are signing over their NIL ownership to the schools for a certain amount of money. And so then the school.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Own that NIL, they can use it for marketing or whatever, but what it also allows them to do is go over that $20 million salary cap, because it's not revenue sharing now, it's the NIL money. So it's a way to go around the rules, and most schools do it now. So he's in year two of a 2-year contract. That contract ends in December 2026. He was enrolled in classes. He was taking his classes at Clemson, at Duke, and was in his new contract, all set to go. And about 4 hours before the window closed for the transfer portal, which was a week ago Friday, he all of a sudden announces he's going into the portal and is going in with a do not contact label, which we've all learned means there's been tampering. You already know where you're going to go. Somebody has contacted you while you were under contract to somebody else. He knew where he was going. The breadcrumbs led to the University of Miami. Duke said, we're not standing for this. You're under contract to us, and we're not going to just let it go like that. And they filed a lawsuit against him. At first, I was curious why they didn't file a lawsuit against Miami for tortious interference, basically interfering with Duke's contract with their own player. And then I went talking to attorneys, you know, I was told they would have to have airtight evidence of the contact between Miami and Mensa. They would have to have copies of the text messages or emails or whatever the case may be. And, you know, short of that, that's going to be tough to prove. So you go after Mensa to try and stop this from happening.
Would that be the type of evidence that Dabo claims to have with?
Yes, 100%.
Golding, would that work?
Yes, 100%. Yep.
Alleged.
I said claims.
Yeah, he did. He got it right. He passed legal muster. So they file the suit and they seek a temporary restraining order, stopping him from doing all of this. The judge kind of gives everybody half a loaf. says, I'm not going to grant the temporary restraining order in full. Mensa can go into the portal. However, I am stopping him. I am enjoining him from doing anything once he gets in the portal. He cannot sign over his NIL rights to anybody else. He can't enroll in another school. So he can go in the portal so that the paperwork is done. The first step of a 3 or 4 step process is done. He cannot do anything other than that until the next hearing on February 2nd. That moves us to this past Friday. And Mensa's attorney puts out an emergency appeal that she wants the hearing done immediately. Matter of fact, she filed the motion on Friday morning. She wanted the hearing that day. Her name is Tricia McGee. She's an attorney here in Charlotte. And the reason was the academic calendar. And here's where it gets kind of weird. School has already started at Miami. Started a couple of weeks ago. It actually started before he even entered the portal. It started back on January 9th.
So the calendar doesn't work well.
Correct. Correct. The calendar works against his argument, even though he's trying to use the calendar for his argument. As we all know, there's about a week and a half window after school starts, the add drop window, where you can add classes or drop classes. That generally is the hard deadline to get into school if you're not already in. That has also come and gone, and that came and went before last Friday's filing by Mensa's attorney, Ms. McGee. So, but the filing had an affidavit from him kind of telling his side of the story, basically saying, if we don't move this up from February 2nd, I'm not going to be able to enroll in Miami or anywhere else. That window will have passed me by. And it's not my fault. Here's the big thing. It's not my fault. I didn't know the academic calendar when I agreed to this new deal with Miami. My advisors, including my agent, didn't really know. And by the way, he didn't name names. He just said, my advisor slash agent. We know it's Darren Heitner, who everybody knows from, you know, trying his legal cases on Twitter. And so, but it's like, okay, in most cases, ignorance is not an acceptable defense of not adhering to the rules and regulations, not adhering to your contract. Ignorance is generally not a good defense. Ignorance of others and them not telling you, also not a good defense. But the judge didn't want to, slam the door completely. And so what he did was he split the difference. He moved it off February 2nd and moved it up to the 29th, which is this coming Thursday. That will be the hearing where it will be a motion for an injunction. That motion will be put forth or has been put forth by Duke. They understand the temporary restraining order was kind of split. Now this is an injunction. An injunction is a long-term stoppage. A temporary restraining order is you stop until the next hearing or the next day in court. An injunction will stop him from doing anything pending the outcome of the trial. So Duke is going to have to go. It's going to be a little bit of a mini trial, if you will, on Thursday. Duke is going to have to present enough of its evidence that the judge will be convinced they have an adequate or reasonable chance of success at trial. Mm-hmm. And therefore, none of this other stuff can go forward until the trial. And, you know, we all know how the court system works in this country. A trial could be sometime next year, which then puts the ball back in Mensa's court. Do you just give up on that, on making that move? Do you sit out and say, forget it, I'm just going to go ahead and put my name in for the NFL draft next year and not play? Because it's too late to do it for this year's draft. Or do you try and go back to Duke and mend fences?
What's the financial difference? Do we know the numbers that are coming?
We don't because it is a, first of all, these revenue sharing contracts, performance contracts are private personal services contracts. So it's hard to find out the details in the best of circumstances. Duke is a private university. There is no amount of FOIA requests. And I assure you, I file FOIA requests for stuff virtually every month on different stories. There's nothing you're going to find. There is an estimation by those who cover Duke that Miami had told them we'd be willing to pay $10 million to get him out of his contract. There is no buyout clause in the contract, according to the filings from Duke. There is no buyout clause with a number that says, give us this amount, we'll let him out. Miami was just guessing at a figure.
And where do we go from here if he wins this, Tony? If Mensa wins this case, and does that, do you feel like that jailbreaks anything going forward? And
vice versa, all of college football. The NIL contracts that you sign, the revenue sharing contracts, you can feel free to walk away from them whenever you want. You know, you'll be sacrificing your future dollars from that school, but you're going to make it up somewhere else. If he's allowed to walk away literally halfway through a two-year contract, everybody's free to walk away when they see fit.
Is Mensa enrolled in class right now at Duke?
Yes.
Okay. So that's a safeguard. He's enrolled in class right now. So if we come through, is there a difference between what's happening in Durham versus what happened in Seattle earlier this month with Williams?
DeMond Williams. Yeah. Well, only in the outcome.
Yeah. it seems similar, right?
It is. The rationale is similar. He had a current and valid contract with the University of Washington. He got poached by Lane Kiffin at LSU.
Lane did something wrong?
Go figure. I know. He's so pristine about everything. Who knew? But when Washington said, and there was a buyout, big difference, there was a buyout clause in Williams' contract. I believe it was roughly about $5 to $5.5 million. And LSU wasn't going to pay it. And so Washington said, then you owe it, DeMond, if you want to go. Through all of that, DeMond changed his mind, decided to stay at the University of Washington, and all was allegedly forgiven between he and head coach Jed Fish. And I have no doubt between the two of them it is. But how your quarterback now goes back and wins back that locker room when he tried to leave is, you know, a whole different story. So it is slightly different than that. Look, man, this happened again. This happened within the same few days at Wake Forest. Offensive lineman Melvin Ciani had signed his 2026 agreement about a week earlier and was on social media talking about, you know, being the core of the offensive line in the upcoming season for Wake Forest. The day before the portal closed, he announced he was going into the portal and with a no contact tag. And literally within 4 hours of submitting his paperwork, he was signed by the University of Texas. Now, I'll tell you, Wake Forest isn't going to do anything about it.
Right.
That's just, they could follow Duke's lead, but it's not who Wake Forest is. The athletic director, John Curry, will, you know, the system, we got to make changes. He's not going to do anything about it. Not when it comes to losing a player like this.
So on the flip side, if Duke wins this case, does it set a precedent for more schools to step up, do you think, Tony, in terms of having some backbone that maybe you're saying John Curry doesn't have? But when I think about this happening in the SEC and not somewhere that maybe football isn't even as important, like at a school like Duke, where clearly basketball is the higher priority.
Sure.
If this happens at a big name blue blood SEC school or even in Ohio State or Michigan, what type of backbone does it give them to hold their chest out and their head up as they walk into the courtroom if they have a similar situation?
Well, I think you put it perfectly in that they're going to walk in with some extra uprightness in their spine for their case. I also think you're going to see more schools where it's possible, where the player has multiple years of eligibility left, you're going to see the schools try and get in more two-year contracts. But it's going to be, it's not going to be one and done as much.
I love that.
And I think you have to go look at Ole Miss and LSU, which are saints and never would tamper anywhere.
Sure.
Halos over their head. They've exchanged coaches this year. They've exchanged a number of players. One of them was the edge, Prince Will Abdura. Mm-hmm. I butchered his last name. But the interesting part there was LSU had to pay between $500,000 and $600,000 to Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. For that contract. So I think that's the interesting thing of what I heard from you about Mensa, because I'm a layman and I understood exactly what you were saying, is you may see these multi-year contracts, but I think what's going to happen is, just like in these coaches' contracts, there's going to be buyout figures. You can leave and you can go, but it's going to cost you in order to do so.
You know what I would relate it to? Two things. One, I think the big difference with the case you brought up, Craig, is it's in the SEC, and Greg Sankey is not going to have this infighting between his schools.
Right.
Jim Phillips has got a problem between Miami and Duke, and Phillips is sitting there just watching and waiting to see how it goes and not much more. Two, I think you can relate it actually to, for as little as I follow it, European soccer, Premier League soccer. We want this player. We're going to negotiate a dollar figure with his team to do the transfer, as they call it. Ole Miss and LSU, it's going to cost $500,000. Okay, we will now do the paperwork so that the player can go over to you. They don't own the rights to the player per se, but they do generally own the NIL rights, and there's no point in doing the transfer if you're not taking your name, image, and likeness rights with you.
Right.
Fantastic. Always a pleasure, Tony, to have you in here. I will say this too.
Glad to do it.
We had a comment here in the chat wanting to know who we like in this current NFC Championship game. Jason, thank you for being the MVP of the chat box tonight with so many thoughts. If you guys would tell us who you like, we'd love to see that in the chat box as well. We know who Tony likes.
If it's not the Rams, I'm really not interested in your comment in the chat box or anywhere else.
Well, you're not going to like what I have to say. I did pick the Seahawks. They're up 17-13. Second half has just kicked off. So, Tony, we will let you get out of here and cheer on your Rams.
I don't get to pick
throughout the second half.
I don't get to pick.
You get to pick, but we're up against a break, and you're going to be here when we get back. Tony, have a great night. Enjoy it. Good luck to your Rams. And
all right, guys,
we'll catch you soon.
All right, be well.
Thanks, Tony.
8:27 on SEC Sunday night. We'll be right back after this break.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete recovering from injury or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt Diamandouros Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamandouros, we're on your team.
This is SEC Sunday Night, part of the Chiefs Sports Network.
Welcome back to SEC Sunday Night Live on the Chiefs Sports Network, proudly presented by Hewitt Namaduro's Law. Always a fantastic segment with Uncle Tony. Very informative, and we trust that he does all of the work and the research and the reading, hours and hours of time, and spends time either in the courtroom or streaming these cases so that he can bring us top-notch information. So from the extremely informative to the...
I had a question for him, and then you just totally cut me off.
I'm terribly sorry.
Let me put it out there in case he's still listening. So, Tony, can you help your fellow last word writer by submitting a FOIA request to Baton Rouge to test the fiscal responsibility that Governor Landry talked to us about when he fired Brian Kelly, just to make sure that LSU is very fiscally responsible?
That is a great question, and it is also a good segue because we know that we can all sense the sarcasm in your voice. So, from court documents,
I would never be sarcastic.
To message board documents, it is time for It Just Means More, genius. And for that, we bring in, as always, our good friend and esteemed producer of the Message Board Genius podcast, Casey Cregan, who I had an up close and in-person encounter with this week. Casey,
what's going on?
It's good to see you again.
It's great to see you, Rob. I just have, like, all of a sudden looking at Craig, it's like I want to sing, I see a little silhouette of a man, Scaramouche. Like, he's all in black, like Man in Black over there. What the hell's going on with that guy?
He's just sitting in the dark.
All we see is the white of his eyes.
He's dancing in the dark. How many song references can we fit in?
Can we time out here? Did you guys hang out and not invite me?
Yes. Yeah, we did.
Nice.
You were in the group chat.
I was in the group chat.
In fact, I wasn't invited.
I was interacting while you guys.
I just sent a picture to the group chat saying that I was doing some research for this show because everyone knows, including Rob's dad, who made sure I knew that he knew who I was, and who I rooted for. But I was doing a little research for the SEC Sunday night, and the young Robert said, I'm here too, except I was way up in the nosebleeds,
right?
And he was at the bougie seats. So
Pinkies up, baby.
We did get a chance to hang out.
I got an upgrade for the second half. So yeah, it was good times.
Thanks for the invite, boys. Really appreciate
you're welcome.
It.
Listen, Craig, anytime that you're down here, you're more than welcome to come to a South Carolina sporting event and potentially see me there.
But listen, I want to go
now. You're in negative degrees up in Michigan. So, all right, let's get into it here because we have some boards that we need to talk about. But I'm more excited about the conversations coming on the back end of these boards with Casey. So I don't often just say let's cut through them really quickly. to start off with, though, we have a smorgasbord of things here. I'm going to zoom in, Casey. Don't worry. Just to start off, MBG says, this Ole Miss fan asked AI why Lane Kiffin wants to hurt them so bad. And Casey, if you will, take it away as we dive into these broken down reasons.
Sure. Steve S. says, my question to AI, if a narcissist breaks up with a woman, is there some psychological reason he'd then want to hurt her? After all, she didn't leave him. He left her. Here's the AI answer. One, breakups still feel like a threat to his ego. Even if he ends it, the breakup means loss of attention, admiration, or emotional supply, loss of control over how he's seen, a reminder that the relationship didn't turn into the perfect mirror of himself. For someone with narcissistic tendencies.
I don't know. It's just cut off.
All right. Number two. If I don't matter to you anymore, that's unbearable. What really hurts isn't losing you. It's the idea that You might move on. You might be okay without him. You might see him clearly without the illusion. That triggers shame, and narcissistic shame is often flipped into anger or cruelty because those feelings are easier to tolerate than vulnerability. And number three, hurting you restores a sense of power. Causing pain can serve a purpose. Reasserts dominance, quote, I still affect you. Confirms importance, you're still reacting to me. And rewrites the story so he feels superior instead of exposed.
Good
Lord. Oh, number four.
It keeps going. Don't worry.
All right. We're almost done. Punishment for failing the role. Some narcissistic people unconsciously view partners as roles. Admire me, validate me, make me feel special. When the role ends, even by his choice, there can be resentment. You didn't give me what I deserved. The resentment can turn into punishment. Number five, preemptive strike against accountability. If he hurts you first, you're less likely to challenge him. You're less likely to expose his behavior, less likely to rewrite the breakup narrative in a way that threatens his self-image. That's a lot of word salad to say. We're coping.
Yeah, that is exactly
two,
it.
Two and three, I feel like, nailed it.
I forget what two and three were.
Yeah, right? I've long since lost two and three.
An hour ago.
We're on really five. Five? How are we on five? You know what that is? Is very clearly you asked ChatGPT a question and it gave you a little more information than you were prepared to receive. I think.
I'm a Gemini guy. By the way, Gemini wants to sponsor.
We know. You like
a Gemini, period.
You like to cut your own path, Craig, so we're not surprised that you're a Gemini guy.
I'm a Taurus if we're talking about my astrological sign.
That's not what we're talking about.
We could be
talking about AI.
Well, you can put into AI like short answers for message board. You know, you don't have to do like just
that was past this blanket. Guy's. That was past this guy's.
Please write the agenda for SEC Sunday night.
Yeah.
Wait, no, I would never do that ever.
I don't do that actually, but
no, you just take my ideas.
Ideas and thoughts are a part of a think tank, and then we type out the agenda. No, you're right, Casey. This is coping on the part of Ole Miss, and at some point, I think we have to recognize that everybody's doing this kind of stuff. The crazy thing to me, and we're going to talk about this in just a minute. Maybe I should have flipped in and done this tech zags board first and then used this as a segue. But it's so funny to me that we have vilified Lane in all of this process. And in many cases, rightfully so. But now he's moved from Ole Miss to LSU. And we still have Ole Miss kind of playing the villain. So what's going on? It wasn't Lane all along. Are you telling me that this happens from other places and other coaches are breaking rules and doing shady things? Never. That could not be the case.
Lane is the bad person.
Only Lane Kiffin. Only Lane Kiffin is doing these things. Casey,
yes,
come on,
it's
now.
100%. It's like that Spider-Man where they're just pointing at each other. Yeah.
All right. Let's
Texax.
Speaking of crazy.
Hey, Billy.
Our friend Billy, congrats to Indiana, but Texas A&M should have won it all, says message board genius, says MBG. Our friend AG Derp says that should have been Texas A&M winning it all. Seriously. The seriously is what got me.
Because it's almost as good as confirmed, isn't it?
Yeah, because it confirmed is my favorite, but the seriously got me because if only we had a chance of winning it on the field.
Well, you know what? I wasn't convinced that Texas A&M should have won the national championship until he said seriously, right. And then I completely flipped my opinion. I feel totally different after reading that last word.
Yeah.
I feel so good about Marcelo Reed coming back. Like, I feel like 8-4 is just a mere distant memory.
It's mere an interception away.
All right.
To be fair, it was windy that day.
I just don't.
Just for him.
All right. Well, I think clearly here's our moment to tip our caps to Indiana. Phenomenal season, dominant year. We have to give credit where credit is due. This is not a product of their older, which they were, but that's not the reason. It's not a product of they spent more money, which they did spend money because they have resources, but that's not the reason. It's not a product of any individual one of these things that we can pick out. It is a product of all of the right ingredients coming together and, by and large, phenomenal execution with a great game plan consistently week after week. That's it. There, we don't have to cook up a reason for why they won the national championship. They executed better on the field than everybody else, period. That's exactly what happened. They had enough talent, and they had superior execution that coaching. Equals a national championship.
Coaching.
Yeah, that's a big reason, too. They had phenomenal coaching. I'm going to give Kurt Cignetti all the props that I can, but I firmly believe also that at the end of the day, the players have to go out there and make the plays. And you can have the greatest coaching staff of all time and an inaccurate passer, and everything falls apart. Accuracy is the number one trait for a quarterback that makes these things go. No matter what the system is, no matter what the offense is, if you can be pinpoint accurate, then you can move the football. And they were able.
You don't want to throw it short on the last play of the game.
You do not. You don't want to make a bad read on the last play of the game either. No,
that doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
And I didn't think Mendoza was that great. He probably played his worst game of the playoff, in my opinion.
Correct.
At the Nash. And maybe that's Miami's defense. Maybe the way that they were hit him. Maybe. But he wasn't as accurate. Even some of his back shoulder throws that are absolutely like he could trademark those throws. He was a little off on them. Again, I'm nitpicking here. They were still fine. That fourth down call, as we talked about on our show, is going to be seen over and over and over again, where he quarterback draw scores a touchdown, big boy run. But yeah, I thought he was just going to pick apart that kind of beat up Miami secondary, and he didn't initially.
No, but he made the plays though. I think that was the key though, right? And that, I think that was Mendoza. He made the plays when they mattered most.
100%.
I mean, the fourth and five, the dive. I saw the next day someone put it on the Sports Illustrated cover because, again, that, you know, Casey, you and I growing up, we were used to reading, you know, SI in print. Rob has only been digital, but it's like to me, like that was.
I had a subscription.
I'm sure you did. I'm sure it was digital. I'm sure it was great, but like to me, like again, I can't wait to, you know, visit Bloomington one day and actually see the Mendoza dive, you know, in statue form, because I think it's absolutely fantastic. You know, kudos to them. My boy Carson. Look, you know, we had Uncle Tony on here a little bit ago. I'm going to have a what do we make of Carson Beck's career? I pulled up his stats. 37-6 as a starter, not bad. Four of his six losses ended in a Carson Beck interception. Not great. Looking at the total yards he threw for, 103 against A&M, 138 against Ohio State, 268, the best game was against Ole Miss, 268, two TDs, one rushing. Threw 232 against Indiana. I think Tony had a lot to do with that, though. I don't think it was all Mr. Carson, though. Underwhelming for Carson Beck.
Well, sorry, and at this point in his career, I think he was doing what he was asked to do in the system. And they were heavily relying on the speed of the defense, as we has been well documented on this show over the course of the playoffs, and playing a game that was going to work best for them. I will make this note, even though it's the SEC, and I want to turn the page here in just a second. Miami's not going anywhere. I don't think they're going anywhere. In fact, we just talked about this Mensa case and how it affects the SEC and college football at large. But specifically, if we want to drill into it, if he wins the case and goes to Miami, then they have their quarterback. If not, they've got to figure that out. Outside of that, they're putting together a stable of weapons. They're almost in the money that they're spending. And Tony just said, you know, allegedly reported from Duke insiders that they said $10 million is what they're willing to pay to get Mensa out of there and get him to South Beach. The money that they're throwing around is reload, not rebuild type of money. They're going to lose these pass rushers. They're going to lose Carson Beck. They're going to lose some key pieces, but they're bringing back Malachi Toney. They added some other receivers from around the SEC that are going to be playmakers for them and bring a lot of speed. And I don't think that we're going to see them go anywhere. Okay. Speaking of,
did you see who Miami also signed though? This also relates to the SEC. Damon Wilson, who's
absolutely
being sued by Georgia.
Absolutely.
Who was at Missouri. So like, you know, again, trying to pick that up, but again, I think
they grabbed a couple Missouri
billable
kids.
Hours yep. And legal team is very excited to take on all of these interesting legal cases.
And who cares if it all breaks loose, you know what I mean? And that's the gamble that they're taking, is that if we're just going to rattle the cage until all the chains break and fall on the floor and it's a complete free-for-all, then that's what they're going to do, and then go try to win football games. Okay, it's 8:43 on SEC Sunday night. The Seahawks lead the Rams 24-20 with 8 minutes and 10 seconds left in the third. Casey, let's go to Clemson, South Carolina, as we see the battle between Dabo Swinney and Pete Golding has ignited this week. If there was anybody that you shouldn't tamper with, let's just call it what it is, it was probably Dabo Swinney. I think that he sits in a position where if he has to pull a Saban and hang it up because he doesn't like the state of college football, he's just about willing to do it. And so he's doesn't care. Other coaches care about calling people out and staying in good standing, and I don't want to get blackballed by this person or this organization or this thing. I don't think Dabo cares. Your take as a Clemson guy and somebody who's tied in well with the school and in the know, we've got a prominent SEC program now. Can we say that about Ole Miss? Are they prominent?
Yeah.
A prominent SEC program who was just in the semifinals for the College Football National Championship versus a two-time national champion ACC mainstay, ACC power in Dabo Swinney and Clemson. And we see a common theme in college football now being put on full display and kind of the guts being spilled out of what this process looks like. Your thoughts and analysis, Casey?
Yeah, so I'm going to maybe surprise you both and say that this wasn't about Ole Miss. I think Ole Miss is the scapegoat, and their fans are responding as such of the broken system, right? And I think the tampering, Dabo said it perfectly the other day with the tampering 101, 201, and 301, how he was saying to a next level. Yeah. The thing that I think the tampering is going to happen, right? That's 101. That's what Ole Miss team was talking about with LSU coaches, with that they're talking on the field during their playoff run saying, hey, you know, come to, that's 101. That's just coaches or assistant coaches talking to players, kind of planting that seed. I forget what he said about 201, but the 301 is where the kid's literally enrolled and he's sitting in class and he's still getting text messages from the head coach. And then, of course, the agent doesn't know about it, right? The agent plays dumb.
No clue.
So I think I truly believe it's less about Ole Miss than the whole system. And I think, Rob, you're spot on. I would not be surprised if Dabo hangs it up sooner rather than later. I think he's going to play this season out. But I would not be surprised, even as a Clemson guy, if he hangs it up like Saban. And heck, maybe he was right about a commissioner or needing some sort of governance, and maybe he is that guy. People already don't like him. He's very polarizing, so he could probably slide right into a commissioner job. Look at, you know, every other league that's out, the professional league that's out there. He's going to do what he believes is correct, whether or not people think it's correct or right. He's going to do it. I think you are exactly right also about who not to tamper with, only because and I hope other coaches, and I saw Brett Bielema come out today and say, have a little comment. Kind of, he played Switzerland a little bit, but he actually backed Dabo as well. I wish I had that quote pulled up, but I didn't. I just, again, it's not even about the Ferrelli kid, God bless him. I think Dabo was pissed too because, A, he was told by the kid multiple times that he was fine, everything was fine, and then all of a sudden he catches wind that the kid's in the compliance office trying to get in the portal again after he was told by 12 different people. The thing I really liked too was that he's got receipts. Again, I don't know if anything can come out of this. I don't think it will, really. And unlike Mensa, Clemson doesn't want the kid back. Like, it's not like, oh no, he needs to come back. Like, that's not even, that's, he's gone. God bless him. Good luck. Godspeed. But I think it's more about the system going forward, whereas Ole Miss fans took it as like, oh, Dabo's the worst. He's picking on us. Like, no, that's not exactly the case. It just happens to be you. It could have been anybody. It could have been Drink. It could have been Jed Fish for all we, you know, it could have been anybody. It just happened to be Pete Golding. And the whole clutching the pearls a week after they're saying that Lane's taking all their guys was actually pretty funny to see too, the hypocrisy. But you know, I was, this is my last statement because I'm kind of all over the place because my thoughts are everywhere. But when I heard that Dabo was going to have a press conference that was being broadcast on Clemson Plus, which is for all the IPTE members, all the people that give money to the NIL, it is a paid subscription, which apparently for $5, you too can be a member like me. But I was cringing because I said to myself, what is he going to say tomorrow that everybody in the nation is going to hate? Instead, what I saw was everybody that hates him, Dan Wolkin. I wouldn't say that David Hale hates him, but David Hale and him have battled over the years from ACC Network. David Hale, everyone outside of Ari Wasserman nationally were like, yeah, Dabo's right here. He kind of peeled back the onion a little bit, right? Everyone knew it was happening, but now, like, now we were putting it front and center for everybody to see. I just, again, I don't know what's going to happen. There needs to be some sort of governance because, quite honestly, the penalty for this right now is, you know, finger pointing. That's it. They don't, there is no penalty, right? What the penalty should be, I'm not sure. It certainly shouldn't be death penalty or anything like that. But I think the point that Dabo was trying, I think, and this is me trying to read this man's mind, he's as scattered as I am when he's talking forever, is like, this has to stop. There has to be a governance of some sort. If they're going to do the tampering 101, cool, that's fine. Let's stop it at a point. And right now, there is absolutely no governance to stop a thing.
And I think that's like the interesting part. I'll go two ways about it. You know, we talked last week about the kid from Hope College, D3 College here up in Michigan on the west side of the state. He entered the transfer portal and he's going to Wisconsin. It was interesting. This week, he was getting interviewed by Hope Athletics. He was at the basketball game this week, and they said, well, hey, how did you, you know, it's fantastic you're going to Wisconsin. It's really great, but how did you get in the portal? And the kid goes, oh, well, I've got buddies who play at Western Michigan, which is not far away from Hope University, and the coaches told the players, hey, tell your buddy to hop in the portal so we can talk to him. So it's that tampering 101 system, and it's like, and the best part about it is you have like a Hope analyst who goes, oh, that's really interesting. That's great. I'm so excited about you going to Wisconsin. Just totally like blows over like, hey, yeah, tampering 101 is good. It's to that 301 level that I think becomes the challenge. And it's like, what does that governance look like? You know, we're like this confederacy. We've got the SEC that kind of has their internal rules. Tony talked about it. Greg Sankey makes sure that nobody's fighting amongst themselves. But then we have the ACC under Jim Phillips who kind of does whatever the hell they want. And then Tony Petitti and the Big Ten do something. And it's just, I think this is the problematic nature of college football versus the NFL. Roger Goodell can put his hand out, you know, put his fist down, and he can say, thou shalt not, and he can have some rules. Whereas in college football, it depends on who your commissioner is and who exactly is doing the rules. Is it Lane Kiffin tampering or is it Pete Golding tampering? We all know Lane Kiffin's tampering. Hell, you saw it was Sam Leavitt was next to him at the damn LSU basketball game, and all of a sudden the Washington quarterback's in the portal. You know, what's happening here? So it's like, I wish I would knew to say, like, I feel like, oh yeah, tampering 201, tampering 301, we can stop that. But I think it's kind of like, it's just the world we live in now. And it's not me ripping on Dabo or thinking that Dabo is wrong.
I think that's a weak argument. And I think that's the problem. And I know the piece that Dabo was getting ripped on, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Craig, yeah, but no, I think the thing that Dabo was getting ripped on is everyone's doing it. He just can't, he just can't abide by the new rules, which is completely crap. He hasn't needed to. He should have, right? Like, in a perfect world, of course you want to get somebody better than what you have, but he wasn't going to do that. That's his morals. God bless him. Whatever he wants to do. Agree [S2] Yep. [S1] With him, don't agree with him. I didn't agree with him a lot of times, too, on getting better at certain spots. But I think that argument of everybody's doing it is the problem. I do. I think that is the huge problem.
And I think that's a
conversation ender. Right,
the governance issue, though, is that there's no equality in to your point, Craig, from conference to conference,
and then
from level to level. Because once you get out of P4, you're still Division I, Right. And then, like, are we going to make a rule that applies to every power conference and the G5s? And then what happens below that? Does it trickle right. down? You know what I mean? Like, there's way
we're seeing it in high school in this
exactly.
state.
Right. Rob, there's so. Way too many puzzle pieces that are different sizes and levels to put one governing body together. And that's been the struggle ever since the transfer portal and NIL became a thing. And it unleashed all of this chaos because they came into the world at the same time and they were like gas to a flame on each other, shifting the college football landscape. And in the background, we literally had shifting happening because of conference realignment. Yeah, so you right. have so many moving pieces and so many levels. There has not been an opportunity for anybody to say, let's try to get our arms around this and put one body or one person who can rule like Roger Goodell and put their fist down. Because we've got 45 kingdoms right. and it's the Game of Thrones out here trying to figure out who's going to stand on the top of it. And as it stands right now, nobody has the upper hand to get far enough up
but
to sit on the Iron Throne.
But here's the Iron Throne problem. And Casey, I'm going to respond to you first. First, I'm holding 2 points. Everybody's doing it. And I also think it's stupid. So I'm definitely not giving that scapegoat. But I think here's the challenge. We talk about having a governing body. Last year, the College Sports Commission came out and said, hey, we're going to get NIL in here, and we're going to take care of this. Again, outside of the NCAA, it's a governing body. It's supposed to review everything. And Tony and I, in our writer's chat and last word, he's like, you know, this is what's going to happen. And I said, and where's the enforcement piece of it? And this is the same argument I'm going to make about whether we're looking at tampering 101, 201, or 301. We could have the Tampering Sports Commission. Who is actually going to give these people teeth to make that enforcement? Because just like the College Sports Commission said, hey, we're going to do all of this, and then all of a sudden, Texas Tech and all the boosters say, whoa, that's not going to allow us to get and be who we want. We're not signing that. And to me, this becomes the issue. It is not a cop-out, but shows the chaos and the problematic nature from which we're at with college football right now.
I also think the thing that, again, I'm going to say it again, my last point, but I think the thing that Dabo harped on too in his second piece after Athletic Director Graham Neff talked was about the calendar. And Rob has been talking about the calendar since I've been on the show. And he laid it out like, he laid it out, an idea, not what it should be, but what he thinks could work in order to limit, not get rid of, and he said that, not get rid of, but it might get rid of that 301, right? And another piece that I hate, and I'm that old man yelling at clouds thing, is the fact that, I wish I pulled the numbers again, but I'm lazy, 9,000 kids enter the portal, and I'm not off by that much. Only 3,300 are going to get spots.
Yep.
I know we're now athlete student, but at some point that's got to change too. Where they have like the calendar, kids are missing. Like Tony was saying before on this show, the kids are Mensa's missed 4 weeks at by the time that this thing will be over. Right, 5 weeks.
You won't even take a midterm, right?
Like there's 16 weeks in a semester.
Right,
like. It's not about, I know it's Carson Beck said it, right? I haven't worried about class in 2 years. I get it. Again, old man yelling at clouds, but at some point that calendar's got to jive with the school too, man. That just, or else professionalize the whole damn thing.
Approximately 6,700 Division I players entered the portal and approximately 1,200 on FBS scholarship are still in as of right now, according to a quick search there.
Thank you. We are way
past the break, so we're going to hit one right here and more on the calendar when we come back as we look at the college football playoff tweaks. Craig, be ready to actually take the mic and walk us through what's going on in the college football playoff. We did not move out of 12. What changed? And how can the calendar maybe help us get back on track? We'll be right back after this.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt Diamandouros Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt Diamaduros, we're on your team.
Oh, man. The building is on fire.
Emergencies and accidents happen. When you're in the middle of a fire or water event, all you want is for things to return to normal as soon as possible. Resto Pros of the Midlands is with you, guiding you through the process and working with you to get your home or office back in working order. They'll answer your questions, discuss procedures, and can act as your advocate when it comes to processing your insurance claim. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. Open 24/7 when you need them. Quality that is guaranteed.
At TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, we believe true health and peak performance start with personalized care. Whether you're an athlete, recovering from injury, or just chasing your next personal best, we're here to guide your journey. With expert coaching, hands-on therapy, and transparent cash-based pricing, you get the care you need without the insurance red tape. One client drove 100 miles just to see us and said it was worth every mile. Contact us at trifitperformance.com or 803-353-5619. TriFit Physical Therapy and Performance, where recovery meets results.
Yo, what's up? Baby, let's go!
This is SEC Sunday Night on the Chiefs Sports Network.
Live on the Chiefs Sports Network and proudly presented by Hewitt Diamaduros Law. I am Rob Williams. He is Craig McMichael. And we did not get an expanded playoff beyond 12 teams for a 2026-2027 season. But there were a couple of tweaks that I think are notable. Craig, give us your thoughts to start off with, and then I'll tell you all the ways that you're wrong.
All the ways I'm wrong. I'm just reporting the news and the facts. What is this, Reddit? Me posting one of my last Word articles talking
Look,
about
we know that you're idiot. Not going to tell us. You're not going to tell us without attaching your opinions about how you like 12 teams. But go ahead. Don't let me spoil it for you.
Okay. First and foremost, he's staying at 12, which is the right number, because 16 or 24 or 275, whatever Tony Petitti wants, is dumb. So college football playoff committee got together all the presidents of the various conferences and the Big Ten, and basically found out the Big Ten and the SEC were diametrically opposed. So rather than making any changes, they came out this week and they said, hey, we're going to stay at 12 for next year. But yet again, for the second year in a row, we've only been in this playoff now. This will be the third year. We're going to change it up just a little bit again, because we want to keep changing things because we're trying to fix things, and we're really not trying to fix anything at all. So the first change they made is called the P4 protection. The P4 protection guarantees that the SEC, Big Ten, ACC, and Big 12 all are going to be secured spots in the college football playoff. Why is this a change, you ask? Well, because Duke, who can't apparently pay for their quarterback, won the ACC this year, and did not make the college football playoff. So to make the ACC and Big 12 feel like they're big boys, like the SEC and Big 10, they were placated. Is this what you mean by me giving my opinion, by the way?
No, I agree with these opinions. So I'm
okay, good.
Making
good.
Pushback.
Good. So the four are guaranteed there. Second, there is one guaranteed fly like a G6 spot. This year we had James Madison and Tulane. Well, now we're just going to make sure we just have one, so we don't have too many G6 teams. Another
blowouts.
Another one we have is Notre Dame, because they have lots of money and influence. The good Catholic boy, Mr. Craig McMichael here, says that as long as Notre Dame secures a top 12 spot in the college football playoff, they will be in the playoff. So we're all about, you know, making sure that people are given spots. The SEC is getting a spot. The Big Ten is getting a spot. The ACC, the Big 12, Notre Dame's getting a spot. Great. Now, here's what they didn't solve. The top four seeds are still going to get byes. The playoff is going to go up out into January 25th next year, 25th, 26th, something crazy in Las Vegas next year. Watch for SEC Sunday Night, maybe to be live from the Palms. Fantastic spot. Get on that, JB. Let me know what's happening. But here's the bigger question. If these rules were in place, how would the playoff be different? Well, let me tell you, first and foremost, two teams would be in, two teams would be out. The two teams that would be in would be Duke and Notre Dame. Duke would have ended up playing Oregon up in Autzen, and Notre Dame would have been playing in the very windy Kyle Field down in College Station. Who would have been out? Well, your James Madison Dukes and Carson Beck and the U. The team that made the semifinals would have been out based on this criteria.
Makes perfect sense, right? Let's tweak it to get the team who proved that they belong. I hate this. I hate looking at playoff performances as a way to prove or disprove whether or not you should have gotten in, because you're getting in based on your regular season. And if that's not the case, then what the heck are we doing? But at the same time, we all knew all year, except for you, because you don't like Carson Beck, we all knew all year that Miami was one of the most talented teams in the country and deserved to be in.
I never doubted they weren't talented. I just don't think they deserved a playoff spot. I thought Notre Dame was playing a hell of a lot better in November than Miami was. So I would have guaranteed that. No, I guarantee you that Notre Dame would have gone just as far as Miami in that playoff.
We'll have to agree to disagree on that hypothetical that Notre Dame makes that same run.
Bring on the hypothetical.
I guess it is
Notre Dame's like an hour from Chicago, by the way. So after we have our Chicago dogs and our deep dish pizza, we'll go down and I'll show you Touchdown Jesus. It'll be great.
I would love a tour. That doesn't mean that I think that they deserve to be in.
We'll go to a lot and watch a lacrosse game too.
Quick shout out again to the chat box. Craig Godwin, our friend, is there highlighting a taunting penalty that allowed the Rams to go down and score. Momentum potentially shifting here in this NFC Championship game as they pull within four. It's 31-27. Seattle Seahawks have the ball with a 4-point lead and just under a minute left in the third quarter. Okay,
is Connor on the sidelines for Seattle or no?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, well, he could be in this guy. So you never know.
Okay, so we have these changes that are being made to how we're getting in. We're basically safeguarding everybody to try to placate. Was a perfect word, Craig. You said it beautifully. We are placating so many people who think that they, quote unquote, deserve a spot based on name recognition or past experience and performance.
What are you doing? What's your change?
I kind of want to throw out AQs completely, to be honest with you. I think that conference championships game matter, and we can incentivize some of the home fields because, to your point, and I agree with this point, we need to have home fields for multiple rounds. I don't know how we do that because of the money situation. But my argument is that 16 is the perfect number because
What's your 16 look like? Because I've seen the 16.
I want no part of teams playing 13 versus 16 and 14 Thank versus you. 15 and Thank playing you. None of that garbage. I want 1 versus 16, yes. 2 versus 15. I want no bye weeks. The bye weeks are absolute garbage. We need to shrink the calendar and condense it. We play straight through. If we want to play big boy football and we want to pay for big boy football and everybody's going to make money, then play like the NFL. We need to end the season at Thanksgiving as it is currently. And honestly, Craig, we can back up a week. We don't have to start on Labor Day weekend. We can go week one the week before that, back everything up, and play straight through conference championship games. I think it's okay for if we're going to do a bye week for everybody to have 1 week off between those championship games and the college football playoffs starting, and then roll and let's go. We've got to condense
could
it.
We add, could we add a week by getting rid of the conference championship games?
I mean, theoretically, yes. But some way or another, we've got to get it backed up in January for multiple reasons. We are far too deep into the calendar. January 25th next year is an atrocity, and we're running way too deep into this calendar. We don't have a good calendar as it is. The teams that play in the national championship have players entering the transfer portal now next year on January 26th after having played in the national championship game and then having a two-week portal window that extends almost to freaking Valentine's Day. And school started at a lot of the Southern schools on January 7th or 8th. We just got the numbers from Tony when the last day to jump in Miami was like January 15th. Miami's not even done playing by January 15th. What are these guys supposed to do? How is somebody supposed to come into that school in the current calendar setup? It does not work. Not to mention, there's a huge gap that I totally disagree with. Between the semifinal games and the national championship, we lost relevance. We missed the window. People forget that this crap is even going on.
Right.
There's too much of a layoff, and this has been a problem for 25 years. I don't understand why it has to be extended out so far, because we're not capitalizing on momentum. And you would think that if we want viewership and we want to maximize, then we would capitalize on the momentum. The thing that runs against us, Craig, is that this game just did, the national championship game just did 30-plus million, the biggest viewership total since the inaugural championship in the college football playoff back in 2015. Right. So the viewership is actually still increasing. So our argument that people are losing sight of it or forgetting about it, or it's not at the forefront and we're not capitalizing on the right media window and we're not capitalizing on the momentum and we're not getting the players in the best position, all that is getting tossed aside by the people who have found themselves in a position to make a decision because they're still maximizing their profit because viewership is still increasing. So the product on the field, and Matt Smith said this on Inside the Gamecocks, the morning show the other day, and it was a fantastic point, is that the Saturday product is elite. We are getting a top tier product in our game day experiences, whether you're at the game or you're watching it. And so people tend to kind of mute all of these other arguments until it's the middle of the offseason and we're not in a position to make these decisions.
Right.
When we're in the position to make the decisions and strike while the iron is hot because we can see the issues, we're not fixing them because we're too worried about let's focus on games, which I have screamed about on this show before. Why are we talking about offseason issues while we have games on the field?
Why are we talking about the SEC going to a 9-game schedule in December when we should be talking about the transfer portal on signing day?
And this is this is the answer. The reason that we're talking about it is because we got to fix the problems while they're at the forefront of our brains. Otherwise, it gets pushed off, and we start talking about it in June when there's nothing to be done about it.
Right. Speaking of which, how did you take in the game?
A command center.
Oh my God! I watched the film room. It was so good.
I do love the film room.
Chizik, Gundy, and Dave Clausen put on a masterclass.
I still
don't know who Steve Adazio was yelling at, though. Like, every time Steve Adazio came up there, he was, like, yelling and getting all intense, and I was just like, Steve, calm down, bro. Like,
very ACK coach's film room.
Well, you had to play. So, here's my question. Where were the SEC coaches there?
Chizik.
But here's, you say Chizik, but Chizik's on the ACC network.
Yeah, but he's been on both. He worked for the SEC network as well, and he coached Cam Newton at Auburn. That's his biggest moment of success.
He got a deal for Cam Newton based on what the current rate is for a quarterback.
Absolutely, but that's his calling card, and that's his biggest moment of success, even though he's been on some
hell of a defensive coordinator. Real good defensive coordinator.
Okay, we're a little off track here. Let's bring it back here as we talk about the setup. I think that we can agree calendar needs to be condensed, and we need to get rid of bye weeks. You think 12 is a good number. I think 16 is a good number. But regardless, the changes that need to be made need to be made. Here's something I want to say.
Could you do 12? So here's why I say you keep 12. You ready?
Yep.
You get to keep your Sweetie Pie conference championship games, which you never mentioned, but you know, then all of a sudden you did mention when I brought it up. But you play the week after is that first round of games. Then the week after that, so you get one week off between the conference championship, and then you get to play those quarterfinals. I think that is a hell of a lot better than taking off, you know, 3 to 4 weeks, what we saw this year with like the Sugar Bowl and stuff like that.
Yeah, we can't take that much time off. I think it just hurts everybody. It diminishes the product, to be quite honest, which again is a devalued argument because the viewership is still up. So it looks like it's a good product, but as football people, we understand it's diminishing the product, right? Another thing that I think is diminishing the product, and I'll turn the page here before we go to basketball to get out of here, is transfer portal rankings. We talked a lot about winners and losers in the transfer portal last week. And I kind of highlighted that it's very easy for us to say that LSU, Ole Miss, and Texas won the transfer portal because they're 1, 2, and 3 according to 24/7's rankings. On3 did a little bit of a different setup when it comes to those rankings, but still you have those three teams close to the top, if not at the top, right? Mm-hmm. However, I'm going to take LSU as a case study here because they're number one in the transfer portal rankings. They have the number one quarterback, the number one edge player, and the number one offensive tackle in the portal. Sam Leavitt, Jordan Seaton, and Prince William and Mellon. Okay? So in those three players, you have this number one ranking that is attached, which therefore sets an expectation for LSU that its college football playoff expectation is the bottom line, and it's really national championship or bust in Baton Rouge for Lane Kiffin in year one. An absolutely ridiculous expectation to put on anybody, especially considering we have no way to truly verify transfer portal rankings. Nope. This is a minute ago we said that we can't govern college football well with one governing body because there's too many levels and there's too many differences between conferences, even if you're in the same level. In a similar way, we can't accurately project the career of a transfer portal guy. Because we have guys in the portal that were short-term signees that are basically high school players that were out of school for 2 or 3 weeks and hit the portal because somebody else came in. So they're getting a different rating than what they got for their high school rating, but nothing's changed. There's been no football played. They just enrolled at one school, sat in a class for 2 days, and then hopped in the portal. We have guys that have been one-and-done warriors who have had a breakout season as a freshman, and now they're going to go level up and make money somewhere else. We have guys who are fifth-year seniors who have jumped from school to school to school. We have guys that are fifth-year seniors that have never played and are now moving from one school to another. There are so many different variances and stories, and we're putting all these guys in a pot and trying to evaluate them on the same criteria and put them on a rating scale to say who is ranked where. And then it's unfair to coaches, to teams, to fan bases, to set expectations everywhere to say, this is the number one player in the portal. And then that team has a hype train attached to that player. Sam Leavitt is a great quarterback. Is he the best quarterback in the SEC going into next year?
Quarterback. I think he's a good quarterback.
He's a college football playoff quarterback. We can say that. Okay. He's been there, done that. Is he the best quarterback going in the SEC going into next year? No. He's not even the best. So he can't be the best quarterback nationally because he's not even the best quarterback in the conference that he's in. But he's ranked number one in the portal. So, we've got this grand quarterback that's going to lead us to the promised land in Baton Rouge. All right? I just don't think that it's fair. I don't think that it's stable. I think that it sets up for people who love LSU to go, oh, my gosh, Lane is killing it. We've got number one this, number one this, number one this. We're going to be number one. And then you have LSU haters who are going to come in and say, if Lane doesn't do something with this roster, he sucks. Like, he can't coach at all. He's got maximized talent. What do we don't know that. No. Fernando Mendoza was not the number one portal quarterback in the rankings last year, but it turns out he was the number one quarterback.
Speaking of which,
newsflash, we can get these rankings wrong. And with the transfer portal, they're wrong at a higher clip because it's just so much more unpredictable. This is not 20, 30 years of evaluating high school talent and knowing that landscape. We have not adjusted to the landscape of the transfer portal nationwide and putting accurate rankings on these players. It's just setting unrealistic expectations. We are setting ourselves up for freezing cold take after freezing cold take, which I'm here for. because I love that segment and I love our guy. And we're going to continue to highlight people's bad takes, including ours. But this is a setup to make bad takes.
No, it is. So you look at last year's quarter, the transfer portal rankings, it's from 247. Yep. Indiana was number 25. But let's take a look. Let's take a look at your top 10. You ready?
Yep.
Oh, you know who else was number one last year? LSU. Texas Tech was two. That worked out good for them. Miami, three. It worked out good for them. Ole Miss, good. Oregon, great. Number six, Florida State. How'd that work out? Number eight, Auburn. How'd that work out? Number nine, North Carolina. 10, Kentucky. So, like,
exactly.
You know, I got to be your hype man sometimes. So I'm supporting you. I'm not always going against you. I got to show some love for my guy because Rob brought it correct, and those numbers really back that up.
Yeah, I appreciate you kind of putting a little bit of meat to the bone there because it highlights it perfectly. And we're going to sit here because we don't really have spring football. It looks like it's going away, and it's going to be less than relevant, and we have no spring portal anymore.
Nope.
The season's over, Craig. As soon as this portal window truly closes, because we still have some lingering decisions out there, a couple of things, we're gonna start riding these hype trains, and a lot of it's gonna be based on transfer portal rankings. And you just proved it right there. We don't know; these numbers don't prove anything. All right, one last thing before we get out of here, I want to highlight a couple of things for us at South Carolina. I mean, SEC basketball coming up this week. Things to watch on Tuesday: Georgia goes to Tennessee or hosts Tennessee at 7 on the SEC Network, and then Kentucky goes to Vandy at 9 o'clock. Big matchups there on Tuesday, followed by big matchups on Wednesday as Texas goes into the jungle at Auburn. Highlighting that midweek, 7 o'clock ESPN 2, and then Saturday we have A&M at Georgia, Kentucky at Arkansas, Auburn at Tennessee. Jam packed day. And then, Craig, the one that I'm really interested in, on Sunday, a huge matchup between Alabama and Florida in Gainesville. It's already heated. Todd Golden went on the air this week and talked about the Alabama situation where we have G League players coming back to college. And he said, and I quote, "We'll beat them anyway." Here we have it.
He didn't have a problem.
A matchup, exactly. And Tennessee didn't have a problem calling them out on Twitter either.
That was so good.
So the matchups are getting a little more heated. The coaches, the social media controllers, if you will, and certainly the players and fans are starting to see this season taking form, and we're starting to talk a little bit. National championship confidence is speaking loudly in Gainesville. We will have David Soderquist of High Top Sports covering all things Florida athletics with us next week to talk about Florida basketball coming right out of that matchup with Alabama. We'll get live instant reaction from him as soon as the game is over. We'll also talk about John Summerall. He has some great takes and ideas as he's been able to observe what that transition into the Summerall era has looked like in Gainesville. Now, before we get out of here, we want to make sure that you're watching that basketball all week as we get ready to talk about it next weekend. I want to remind you to follow at Projection Sports, P-R-O-J Sports, for our guy Tyler Markley, not only giving you schedules every day, but also giving you quads to watch for each night. He'll let you know what type of game your team is playing in, quad one, quad two, quad three, quad four, who the opponent is. It's a complete breakdown. It is beautiful. It cuts a lot of research out for you so you know what type of matchup you're walking into. Speaking of not having to do research and looking at the matchups, before we get out of here, I told you before that we had a little baseball anecdote to close out the night. Craig, somebody told me this week that you once had an affinity for not just playing lacrosse.
Right.
But playing baseball as well. Get us out of here with a story about the greatest tryout of all time.
Yeah, well, this former, so I was a NAIA, NAIA lacrosse athlete at the University of Michigan, Dearborn, which I was very proud of. But in March of 2006, my brother and I decided. We went down to Lakeland for his 21st birthday, Lakeland, Florida. We wanted to go see the Tigers play. Well, the Detroit Tigers had an open tryout, so we showed up. Mind you, neither one of us had played baseball since high school. But we showed up. We were there. We kind of got our swings in. And needless to say, we did not make the team. But here's the benefit. We got a few throws in. We got a couple of swings in. Most importantly, we made it to Tampa Bay to Legends Field to see the Yankees and Phillies play. Sat by a dad and son right from Philadelphia. Had a couple of cold ones at the Tiki Bar. And it was a phenomenal time. But, you know, I'd like to say, you know, yes, I was an athlete. Yes, I did try out for Major League Baseball, the Detroit Tigers. Unfortunately, I did not make it. But, hey, neither did Crass Davis, and it worked out for him.
Well, you know, we have quite the basketball season to make it through before we get to baseball season. But who knew, ladies and gentlemen, that right here we had in our presence, hosting this show, a baseball expert, one who once had a tryout for the big leagues.
I got caught.
What did you learn from that? What was that experience like?
We walked up in shorts and t-shirts, and a guy walked up next to us in a full, like, baseball jersey and pants. He had just got cut from some other team, was looking to make it. We looked at each other like, what the hell are we doing? But you know what we did? We embraced it, because guess what? We are in the backfield of Lakeland. This is where the pitchers and catchers are reporting. This is where they're doing their work. And we were lifelong Tigers fans. So for 2.5-3 hours, we had fun. It didn't worth a damn. We knew we weren't going to make the team. We knew we were going to get cut. But we got to go. We got the swing in the batting cage. My brother took one off the hands. Assistant general manager at the time, Al Avila, goes, ooh. And I go, ooh, you got an ooh from Al Avila for getting one in on the hands. I was working the ball more towards right field. Maybe it was a little late on some of those fastballs, but that's okay. It was awesome. It was a great experience, and I'm so excited that I got to share it with my brother.
Well, that's where Craig was 20 years ago. The trend has been to let us know what you were doing 20 years ago. I was
in diapers.
I was not in diapers. I was hosting a middle school party and listening to High School Musical, which also came out 20 years ago. So that's about where I was, channeling my inner Troy Bolton. You guys let us know where you were 20 years ago and what you're thinking about this game. Oh, look at that. Maggie's here. She wanted to highlight that Missouri also plays this week. Maggie, I just brought out the big games.
Maggie got a shout out from Peter Burns this weekend.
Sorry that I didn't do that.
Twitter blew up. Peter Burns. Thanks for the shout out, by the way, Maggie.
Well, apparently Maggie's the legend if she's getting shout outs from Peter Burns. All right.
We were lifelong Tiger fans, always knew I love Craig the most. Take that, Rob Williams. And with that, we'll see you next week with David Soderquist from High Top Sports on SEC Sunday Night.
See you next time.